Hello, I'm Kirsty Young, and this is a podcast from the Desert Island Discs archive. For rights reasons, we've had to shorten the music. The programme was originally broadcast in 1977, and the presenter was Roy Plumley.
On this occasion, I'm in a lovely old house on the Cornish coast, and I'm with Dame Daphne du Maurier. Dame Daphne, what would you be happiest to have left behind if you were on a desert island?
I don't think anything particular. I should be unhappy to leave my home, which I love.
How much does music mean to you? Is it an important thing in your life?
I've got to be very frank with you and tell you it used to mean much more than it does now.
Do you play records a lot?
Not a great deal. I used to, and I've got records stacked away, but I must confess that nowadays I am a telly fan.
Yes.
And I go into my television with my supper in the evening at about 8 o'clock, switch on, and switch off at about 11 o'clock, going to sleep sometimes in the middle.
What's the first record you've chosen?
Well, this is really a record I've loved for a long time, which is the very well-known Grieg Piano Concerto. And I used to hear this during the war when I was staying with friends, and this is where I heard most of what I call the good music that I like and keep.
Part of Grieg's Piano Concerto in A minor with Geza Ander and the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra. You're the third generation of a writing family. Your grandfather was Georges du Maurier, the illustrator and author of Trilby.
Yes,
do you remember
right.
him?
Oh, no. He died before my father even married. He died before the end of the century, 1895, 96. I never can quite remember the date off the cuff like this. And his son, my father's elder brother, Uncle Guy, he wrote a very good play called An Englishman's Home.
Oh, that was very celebrated.
Which was very celebrated and was saying how the Germans might one day invade England. And it was a terrific hit about 1909 or 1910, I think.
Mm-hmm. And your father?
And he was killed in the First War. And my father didn't write, but he did do a lot to other people's plays.
Yes, as an actor-manager.
As an actor-manager.
Sir Gerald du Maurier.
That's right.
And now you and your sister,
yes,
Angela, right?
Yes.
Do your children show any signs of keeping up the tradition?
No, I can't say they do, but I do have hopes of a grandson, my son's eldest boy, Freddie, who writes very good poems.
I've been reading your autobiography of your first 25 years growing pains, and you announced at the age of 4 that you had already written a book.
Well, I know this is what I've been told, you see, by the governess who taught us. And I myself have no recollection of having... It must have been pure make-up, you see. I couldn't possibly have written a book at that age. But the title amused me, John in the Wood of the World. What on earth was I thinking about? I don't know.
It's a very good title.
It's
You'll have to write the book.
Maybe I will.
Were you a bookish girl?
Very. I never stopped reading. I learnt at about the age of 3 and 4, then gradually got on to books and never stopped from then on till rather late in life.
Well, you were obviously destined to be a writer. What was the first thing you wrote which was published?
I wrote short stories which got published, aged about sort of 17, 18. And then my first novel after coming to live down in Cornwall was The Loving Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And this was accepted by Heinemann and was published. And from then on, I didn't have rejection slips, thank goodness.
Right, let's have your second record. What's that?
Variations on a Theme by Paganini, by Rachmaninoff, which I also heard in the war, and I must have got the record and played it during the evenings.
The 18th variation from Rachmaninoff's Rhapsody on a Theme of Paganini, Julius Katchen with the London Philharmonic Orchestra. You were brought up in London and Paris. When did the West Country come into your life?
Well, this was about 1926, 27, when the family suddenly decided they'd like us to have a holiday home in Cornwall. And we came down and discovered Ferryside, where my sister lives today, at Foy, on the estuary, on the harbour there. And this I simply adored from the start, and used to spend all the time I could there, and was allowed to, because I was growing up by then. I was sort of 19, 20.
Mm-hmm. And you bought a boat?
And got a boat, yes. And there it was. I met my husband, too. He came down in his boat.
Yes.
And so on.
Your first novel, The Loving Spirit, that you were talking about, was about Cornwall.
Oh, yes, entirely about a boat-building family. A lot of it was fictitious, but it was based on their family letters and so on. Yes,
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 and
indeed.
This young army officer read the book and
was
fascinated by the district.
That's right.
Also thought he might like to meet you.
He did, yes, and came down in his boat and we met, and that was that.
Now, you began to cast envious eyes at a house in the woods, not far away.
Ah, yes. Well, this was my trespassing days. We walked a lot, my sisters and I, and we used to trespass round the grounds of Menabilly, which is the other side of the harbour from us at Foy, and peer at this house there, which wasn't lived in because the owner lived away. He used to come down sometimes. And I got a terrific thing about this house. And eventually, many years afterwards, came to live there.
Mm-hmm.
The owner, I asked if I could possibly rent it. This was during the war. And went to live there and was there, in fact, with the children. My husband was off at the war from 43 till after he died in 65.
A most romantic house with a ghost.
Well, people say they're ghosts, but I'm not psychic and I've never saw anything there.
There was a skeleton that was found.
There was a skeleton, but I don't think he ever haunted the place. A skeleton was supposed to be found about 1821, and everyone said he was somebody who'd been walled up during the Civil War. But, and this comes into a book I wrote called The King's General, which is all about the Civil War and about Menabilly.
Mm-hmm. You have a very strong sense of the past, haven't you?
Oh, I have a terrific thing about the past. I adore history, and especially the sort of 17th century time.
Mm-hmm. Record number three.
Record number three, I think it's Clair de Lune, Debussy's Clair de Lune. And this they played through a film of mine called Frenchman's Creek. And my husband simply adored it. He was a great fan of mine. He used to love all my books. And he never read them until they were finished, and then he had the first copy. He didn't read them in proof or anything like that. But he read Frenchman's Creek, loved it. We went to the film, which actually came out, I think, just after the war or during the war years. And Clair de Lune was played through it. And somehow, I don't know, I got to love it too.
Thank you. Debussy's Claire de Lune, played by Eileen Joyce. You've written a number of biographies. The first one about your father, Sir Gerald, shortly after his death in 1934.
Right.
He was a pioneer of naturalistic acting. Was he as relaxed off stage?
Oh, yes, I think so. He was, I would say, rather emotional person, yes. But relaxed, oh, yes, of course, when he was with us, children and so on. He was a great person. I adored him.
There have been several books about your family. One about your splendid great-great-grandmother, Mary Ann Clark, the mistress of the Prince Regent's brother, the Duke of York.
Yes.
Why did you write that as a novel?
Well, I wanted it to be a documentary, if you know what I mean. I wanted it to be a proper biography. But I think my publisher wanted to sell it as a novel. And I think that's how it came about.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't say it was strict biography because there must have been bits in it that I rather made up, you see. It wasn't entirely conversations and that sort of thing, which if you're doing strict biography, is not permissible.
Mm.
At least I wouldn't permit it with myself today.
And the biography of Bramwell Bronte.
Oh, yes, yes. That was a proper biography because I don't think I had any fictitious things in that at all.
And recently, two Elizabethan or Jacobean biographies of Anthony Bacon and his brother
That's
Francis.
That's right. Well, you see, this is years after having done the other one, Mary Ann, and I'm much more particular about biography now, and I was determined to keep to facts, not do anything fictitious at all. I can surmise certain things, but not fiction.
Where have we got to? Record number four. What's that?
Record number four is Pavan for a Dead Infanta.
Ravel.
Ravel. There's a picture, I think, by Velasquez of a little infanta with her hands out as though she was dancing. I think she was Philip the Fourth's daughter. I can't remember. My history suddenly eludes me. But this is what I think of. And it's very soothing. It's lovely.
Ravel's Pavane for a Dead Infanta, Pierre Monteux conducting the London Symphony Orchestra. You've been rather fortunate in the number of your stories which have been picked up by the film industry.
Not a tremendous number, really, you know. Rebecca, Frenchman's Creek, My Cousin Rachel, The Birds.
That was from
Hitchcock,
a short story,
yes.
Wasn't it?
And The Scapegoat with Alec Guinness.
Yes.
Don't Look Now is another short story. That's about... Hungry Hill was another one,
mm-hmm.
All about Ireland.
That's rather an impressive total.
It's only about 6 or 7 out of about 20.
Yes.
Well, pretty good, yes.
Hitchcock made a couple of them.
I think he did Rebecca and The Birds.
Which ones have you liked most?
I would think Rebecca. Yes, I think that was... very good.
That was Laurence
Olivier,
wasn't it?
Yes, Laurence Olivier and Joan Fontaine. I would say that was definitely the best.
And you've paid your respects to the theatre by writing three successful plays.
Yes, that's true. The Years Between was a war play. Rebecca I also adapted just before the war. And September Tide.
Record number five.
Record number five is, I think, Greensleeves. Vaughan Williams is Greensleeves. And I've chosen this because in a curious way, it's also rather like Pavane. It takes me back to this 17th century. And my biography of Anthony Bacon, this is rather strange because he died in 1601. And I wanted to know where he was buried, and I never knew. My good research lady discovered that he had been buried in St. Olaf's, Hart Street. And I was in London and went to St. Olaf's. And walked into the church. There was nobody there. The organist was practicing for Sunday up above. And I went and stood by the chancel. I knew he was buried somewhere beneath there. And suddenly, the organist began to play that haunting Greensleeves, which, of course, he would know. He'd been very musical, and it would have been played in his day and sung by everyone. It was the sort of hit song of late Elizabethan times. And I don't know, it was rather eerie,
yeah.
But I was glad. So I've chosen that.
The Vaughan Williams arrangement of Greensleeves, Sir John Barbirolli conducting the Sinfonia of London. What are your writing habits, Dame Daphne? Do you write regular hours every day?
It just depends on the season. You see, if it's the summer, then I work away in the afternoon, and after tea, go down and have a swim, and come back and perhaps work a bit before supper. In the winter, a bit in the morning, out in the afternoon, and then from tea time solidly on till supper. But it gets a bit different. Now I'm getting older, do you see? I probably, when I next start on anything, shan't do quite so many hours. I don't know.
You're not writing anything at the
moment? No, not at the moment. I'm too busy training my puppies.
What next, do you think? The last two books have been biographies. Are you going back to novels?
I just don't know. I'm very interested in the people who've lived in this house, in the, again, my old century, 17th century.
Yes.
I bet it'll be difficult to find out, and I mightn't be able to get enough to make a proper biography, so I might have to do fiction.
So this house, Kilmarth, has got your imagination just as Men of Billy had.
Yes, I think wherever I live, I get a thing about the place, and my imagination starts working.
Right, next record, please.
I mustn't get nostalgic about all these records I loved in the past, because I'm on a desert island. And I must try and remember what things were being played when I came ashore. And one of the most popular songs I've heard during the past, say, 12 months, is Charles Aznavour singing a song called She.
She may be the face I can't forget, a trace of pleasure or regret. Maybe my treasure or the price I have to pay. She may be the song that summer sings, maybe the chill that autumn brings, maybe 100 different things within the measure of a day.
Charles Aznavour. Now, of course, you're a sailor and a fisherman, so a desert island wouldn't present the same problems for you that
well,
it would
now,
for many others.
Well, now, wait a minute, let me interrupt. I was a sailor and was a fisherman, but I haven't been properly to sea until I went this spring with my son, and that was just up and down the harbour. But I haven't been to sea since my husband died, way back in 1965.
But these
adored boats, and we used to sail a lot, you see.
But these are skills like riding a bicycle that you'll never lose.
No, I don't think I would lose, but I'm awfully impractical. I don't think I could ever get myself a boat, exactly, or build myself a boat. But the point is, I've got to think of getting away from the island, you see.
You would want to escape.
It's not so much that I want to escape, but it would be a challenge. And I rather like challenges. And so my next record is because I've heard it on my television, and it's the theme tune that they play in the Aeneidin line. And that sends me, it absolutely sends me. But this on the desert island, I think it would get me moving to do something.
theme music of the Oneidin line. It's not terribly nautical, actually. It's the Adagio from Spartacus, which is a ballet about ancient Rome by Cacciatore.
Yes, I wish I'd seen the ballet, but I can only connect it with the Oneidin line now. Never mind.
What's the last record?
Well, here we are again. I'm still trying to get away. I'm still challenged. And there's a glorious song that the Ark Royal ship sings called Sailing. And I've heard this once or twice, and this would really get me into a cockle shell, I think, or something to start pulling out to sea. It inspires me.
Sailing by the ship's company and band of HMS Ark Royal. If you could take just one disc out of the eight, which would it be?
I think I'd choose Oneidin line. It's so stirring. I think I would.
Spartacus.
Yes, Spartacus.
Right. And one luxury to take to the island with you.
When I turn on the gramophone in the evening, I would like what I do here. At 7 o'clock, I have my nip of whiskey and ginger ale. And that should keep me going with the gramophone records.
Right, I shall see there's a supply to give you a nip an evening for as long as you're on the island.
Fine.
And one book, and you're not allowed the Bible or Shakespeare or big encyclopedias as obvious choices.
In that case, I'd have Jane Austen, and there's an edition I have at the moment beside my bed which has three novels in it.
That's fine.
So if that's not cheating, the one I'd take would be Sense and Sensibility, Mansfield Park, and Pride and Prejudice.
That's all easy three to arrange. And thank you, Dame Daphne du Maurier, for letting us hear your desert island disc.
Well, don't forget, I'm on my way in that cockle shell, sailing. I shan't be long.
Goodbye, everyone.
You've been listening to a podcast from the Desert Island Discs archive. For more podcasts, please visit bbc.co.uk/radio4.